Welcome to this beautiful day. You've tuned in to Oneironautics Podcast with Eat, Dream, Be. I'm Paul.
Hardy here.
And we just had the pleasure to chat with the metaphysically enchanting Noah Lampert. We religiously tune in and now sponsor his podcast, Synchronicity, and just got to sit down with him and have a conversation. Noah is a dreamer and a fellow seeker and lover of life.
If you haven't checked out Synchronicity, it's truly an inspired podcast. Just in the last 6 months since I found it, although I've listened to the previous episodes, he's brought on guests that highlight the issues that I'm most interested in. Dreams, mindfulness, individuation, and I absolutely had to reach out to him after the most recent episode with Stephen Campman on individuation, discussing Hermann Hesse's Demian, very special book in my life. And this was really reinforced just the lesson of reaching out to people that you want to collaborate with in the world. We found Noah's email, sent him a message, and now here we are having this conversation and doing some work with MindPod Network in the future. In this episode, we talk about fostering spaces for creativity, finding balance between logic and magic, learn the origins of the Synchronicity podcast and the MindPod Network as a whole, talk a little bit about personal evolution, individuation, and our dreams. Also discuss MindPod Network's new book release, Practically Mindful. It'll be out in a couple weeks and ready for holiday gifting. It'll definitely be our office gift at Eat, Dream, Be here.
And Oneironautics now supports the Alan Watts Foundation. Noah recently built a website out for them, the Alan Watts Electronic University. This is a collection of all of his audio recordings and all kinds of merch and swag. The proceeds benefit the foundation and essentially his family. And so if you visit www.eatdreambee.com/Alan Watts, you'll be directed to the Alan Watts Electronic University. And if you use the promo code EATDREAMBE, you'll receive a discount off all of his recordings and anything you find in that store.
25%.
Dang. So tap into his essential collection and support the legacy of one of our most foremost modern spiritual scholars.
He'll hold your hand as you walk the path.
Without further ado, Noah Lampert.
We are, each one of us, everything that there is. Between whatever happens is as important as what happens.
We really found you through your podcast Synchronicity and work with MindPod, but you know, we're really curious about some of kind of your other interests, passions, projects in life. Can you kind of tell us a bit about where you're focusing your energy these days?
Yeah, I mean, it's a very poignant question at this time in my life. I feel like everyone goes through these periods where you look back at where you were like 5 or 10 years ago and you're like, oh man, like how was I that person? Like I know so much more now, living the illusion that as you're doing it now, like you know a lot. And then you look back in 5 years and you're like, oh shit, I don't really know that much. But I will say at this point in my life, like I do feel relatively focused on where I'm spending my energy. As you mentioned, I have MindPod Network, which is a podcast network and just kind of collective of people who are putting out, you know, conversations and discussions about life and the essence of life. And I think that they're all coming at it from different angles, but they're all kind of talking about the same thing. So, you know, that to me is incredibly important. And I'm trying to extend that out in a lot of other aspects of my life. Right now, though, primarily, like my driving focus is how to creatively get in touch with my own creativity and allow people to do that for themselves too. And this has a lot to do with podcasting and having discussions about things people don't normally talk about. But also just like making music, you know, talking to other people about how they create. I think, you know, I was having a really interesting conversation with my friend Vic Berger, who does these excellent like satirical, political, and just entertainment videos. Really, really cool. And has just like grown tremendously in terms of his reach and potential. I'm having him on the podcast, or I was supposed to have him on my podcast this week.
Nice.
And he's like, and he was like, you know what? I don't really feel up for it. I'm pretty down about this whole election thing. So this is the second person, and both people who are in the comedy arena who said this to me, and I see how it's affecting people, and how it's really affecting them to like their deepest sense of their core. And like, I had a conversation with him, and he was feeling better by the end of the conversation. And I'm seeing that there are so many things that go on in external reality that impact people so tremendously inner-wise. I like to kind of explore the connection between the inner and the outer. So, you know, and just to touch on the point of what happened with the election, like, I'm not happy about it. Like, it was not a good thing. It wasn't the result that I was looking for. But on the same token, I think it revealed something about the character of this country and what's actually been going on, regardless of what some of us would like to think. And that needed to happen. Like, I know you guys, you know, deal with dreams and the unconscious. Like, this is revealing the shadow aspect of what's going on, not only in our individual lives, but collectively. And if we don't address it, and we don't talk about it, and we don't figure out solutions to kind of bridge that divide, then we're in trouble. I don't think we're only in trouble because Trump is president and these people are insane. That's obviously not going to be a great thing, but like, we have to really learn how to talk to people who we don't agree with instead of like characterizing them as enemies or stupid or unsophisticated. So back to your original question. Sorry for digressing.
No, absolutely. And I guess before you get back to the beginning, you know, we really, I listened to your short episode, which people can do, your podcast Synchronicity episode 56, I think it was, you know, which was just a little reflection on the election. And, you know, Paul and I kind of stand with you there, as we are, yes, we're white males, and we're not kind of directly feeling oppressed, but I really view it as an opportunity for growth. And if we look at kind of the political atmosphere, I think that people underestimate kind of the efforts that are required to make massive changes.
That's right.
And, you know, if we look back, I think there's some really interesting parallels to, you know, the 60s and us finding some new voices and actual leaders that we can look up to and make these big revolutionary changes. And if we had elected someone else into office, I don't know if we'd necessarily be having these discussions. So at least we're having the discussions.
That's right.
Yeah. And I mean, like, what was going to happen if Hillary was elected? There still would be half of the country that was livid.
Oh yeah.
Right. Like, that's undeniable. And those are the people who seem, at least in my estimation, to be slightly more irrational. And they have guns, and they don't have no problem using, you know, I mean, I just think that like this looks like the worst. It's like everything in life. Like, when you're going through a really shitty situation, you focus in on that and you're like, oh my God, this is the worst thing ever. But then when some time passes after the thing, you look back and you go, oh, it wasn't that bad. Or maybe you actually learned something and it was an opportunity for growth. So how this relates to what you asked, like, how am I spending my energy? Most of my time is now being spent on trying to give people the space to cultivate peace of mind, you know, clarity, compassion. That's all I'm trying to do. And there's a lot of different ways to do that. You can do that through creating a piece of music. You can do it by creating a podcast. You can do it by having discussions with people. You can do it by writing. But I want to create like a wide spectrum of entry points for people to realize that like, you don't have to be caught up in the stories and dramas that we tell ourselves. That's not to say like you disengage from life and don't like deal with what is going on. That's not what I'm advocating, but that there is an alternative to kind of living in a paranoid, fearful, scared reality. And like you alluded to, and I pointed it out, and I really pointed it out a lot because I don't want it to be lost. Like, I'm a white guy. You guys are white guys. We are in a really privileged position in this country in this period of time. That to me isn't a burden, though. That's like an honor. That's a privilege that allows us to actually do things, like privilege in a good way, allows us to actually like have discussions about this, bring this up with people who maybe don't feel like we do, use platforms, create whatever inherent advantages that we have in this country to make the world a better place for people who don't have those advantages. So, you know,
yeah.
I don't think it's something to feel guilty about if you have the right perspective on it. But, you know, it all of this stuff, I think just underscores the tremendous importance of creating opportunities for dialogues between people. Like that has to happen for any type of understanding or healing to happen across, like, nationally, individually. Like, that has to happen.
Yeah, and also kind of an opportunity to acknowledge that we do have, as human beings, kind of innate freedoms. You know, we can kind of seek inner peace within ourselves, and the journey is not always outward. And so that's something that we're very interested, speaking about dreams. I know,
yeah.
You know, you mentioned music, and we have kind of a strong affiliation with music as well with the company. We're kind of launching these Eat Dream B-Sides. They're these cool acoustic sessions we're doing with folks kind of as we travel and in our community here on the Front Range of Colorado. And we really feel like music is one of those escapes. Dreams are kind of one of those escapes. And that music is very much kind of like a dream image and that we're sharing with people. And there's an incubation period and there's a creation. And then you're really manifesting something that will kind of share these feelings with other people.
Right. Exactly.
And the ultimate collaboration tool it becomes. I'm curious on both platforms for what came first? Was it the music or was it this, you know, you've seemed to grow this platform of the MindPod Network. And, I'm curious to learn more about where that originated from. And did music come first or did that come after?
Was the music kind of part of the spiritual journey or how did this go?
I mean, I'll tell you how this, my origin story for this stuff, like, you know, like a comic book hero. I think Michael Phillip used that term when I saw his podcast, Third Eye Drops, and I liked it. I always had an interest in music. Like, I played saxophone from a really young age. I was engaged with it, but I don't think I appreciated music fully until I took psychedelics for the first time when I was about 15 in Boston on a 5-week music program at Berklee College of Music, where I eventually went and graduated from. And I was 15 in a city in these crazy dorms, and a friend brought three tabs of sun. He had nine tabs of sunshine acid, and I took three, and he took three, and this other kid took three. I had read extensively about LSD. I was very interested in it. I wanted to do my research before even beginning to consider doing it. Really read like several books on it, you know, from like, you know, medical stuff to like just anecdotal stuff. And this was harder to do back then. This is probably 1998, 1999. So like the internet wasn't like what it is today in terms of finding out information. I think Arrowhead was right around then, which was nice. But anyway, I took three tabs of this, which was 300 micrograms each. So 900 micrograms, my first trip. And it lasted about 18 hours. And it just kind of flipped my entire world. Like the cosmology.
Was there an intention setting like beforehand?
No, I mean, there was, but like I was a 15-year-old kid, you know, like I mean, I always like to say now, like, yeah, like I, you know, honor these substances and like, you know, go in with the intention to learn something. But like, you know, I was 15, I knew it was an important thing and I had saw what it culturally had done. So I didn't take it lightly, but like, how do you, before your first trip on anything, like, how do you explain, you can't be prepared for it. It's not like there's some thing you're going to read, like, oh, okay, I get it. So I didn't really have any intention setting, I have to say. But that said, like, I was guided by whatever the process was over the 18 hours, and it just kind of opened up my mind in a lot of different ways. And I remember achieving like a few different flow states while I was in it. Like there was in the bottom of this dorm on 270 Comm Ave in Boston, there was this pool table, like this rec room. And I remember going down, and I wasn't hallucinating this. I was like amazing at pool all of a sudden. I'm like, okay, I'm not bad, but I'm not like good at pool. But I was everything.
But
boom,
you can see them like lining up. And
oh, yeah, it was amazing. Yeah. I was like, bam, bam, bam. I was just like pool shark. And like, it was nuts. But that experience really fundamentally changed my view of reality and what I had thought. I like to describe it like, previous to that, I was living life with my head firmly up my ass. Like, I really did not understand that my actions had actions on other people, that there was a potential relationship between my view of the universe, my conception of reality might not be actually what it is. Like, I didn't have those questions. You know, things that probably like Donald Trump and other people in power are actually like still thinking like. They don't recognize the connections. But I was lucky enough that I went through that experience. And after that, I mean, music started to take on. I listened to a lot of music. I classically, someone put on Pink Floyd's The Wall.
Right.
When the LSD was first kicking in. So, like, you know, that. I listened to a ton of Massive Attack during that trip. And it kind of opened up my eyes and ears to the audio dimension and what that could mean. Over time, you know, with the internet blossoming around that time, Napster and FTPs, I was just a music consumption machine. I mean, I would probably listen on a day to 5 to 10 albums. And like this, getting an album back then on like a 14.4 modem, like it would take like a day, a full day to get like a Destiny's Child album.
Oh,
yeah. Writings on the Wall, Destiny's Child, great album actually. So it was really good. But I started consuming a ton of music. I was still playing music, saxophone. And then I decided to go to Berklee College of Music, which was a great experience. I eventually switched my major from nothing to music synthesis, which was a pretty hard program to get into. And I actually had to leave school because of like a very heavy transcendental psychedelic experience where I was basically tripping for like 3 months. That's another story. So when I came back, I had to apply to get into this program. And like, typically they're only letting people in with like really high grades, like really proficient, like a very sophisticated portfolio. And I had a portfolio of songs I had made, but nothing. And I just leveled with them in the interview. And I was like, listen, I took a lot of acid. I experienced some fundamental truths. I didn't know how to process them. And this is like a meeting with like the heads of the department chair, and they let me in, which is really cool of them. It's a cool school. And so that kind of started merging that big experience I had in school. Really kind of merged.
Was that also on LSD?
That was also on LSD, although within the span of me tripping for 3 months, I definitely probably took mushrooms in there at least once or twice. I mean, that's school. I mean, college, obviously people experiment with a lot of different psychedelics, but I mean, Berklee, like it's just that town, Boston is just filled with young kids, right? That's all it is. They're all going to college. And you're at a music school, like that place is just nuts. So like if you want to do some inner exploration, and you can get fucked up there too. Like it's not just like a fun thing. But that was really the beginning of things kind of coalescing in terms of in terms of the spiritual or you know, inner exploration. My entire life, you asked which one came first. Music was there, but it was kind of on the side. As time has gone on, these things have kind of come together. But I was always, always, always interested in reading about different ways of looking at the world. I mean, I remember reading like, you know, Carl Jung's interpretation of Job when I was probably like 12 years old, which is like an insane. Cool. I don't think I understood a word of it, truthfully. But, you know, it was like a very heavy thing. I used to read that stuff. And then outside of that, I had experiences throughout my life well before I started smoking weed or, you know, taking psychedelics that just fundamentally made me question the nature of reality. And just doing various thought experiments while I was growing up that I still can remember to this day, that I sometimes share with people to see if they've had similar experience. And there's some that I haven't found people who have had those same experiences, but they shaped my world in a way that like there was always this undercurrent of like curiosity and knowing there is some other level of thing that's going on. But like everyone else, like I don't live in that space 24/7. Like I oscillate between, you know, knowing we're all one, there is no duality, and living in a dualistic world where I have responsibilities and a family and things to take care of. And so to get back to the original question, to tie it even back into that, I think my life is about trying to find a balance between those two worlds and allowing people to explore each of them on their own terms in a way that makes sense, that allows them to kind of, you know, individuate or self-actualize or like figure out what the meaning and fulfillment of their particular incarnation is.
So kind of between logic and magic or rationality?
Yes, exactly. Exactly.
Wonderful.
That's great. It's always interesting talking about the reincarnations. And Hardy and I got into a conversation yesterday and diving into, you know, the intention of lucid dreaming and how, you know, a lot of people like to dream and like to just observe through their dreams. And so like, you know, and I've been aware of lucid dreaming for years now, but you know, there hasn't been a large pursuit in my life. If you're going to, you know, take responsibility and set intention into a lucid dream, then that's just more of your life that you have to take control of. And I've always just liked sitting back and kind of, you know, letting the cinema of a dream unfold. And so, you know, after listening to one of your first conversations with Robert Wagner, it was, you know, it was enlightening just to feel empowered on like, okay, I can, you know, really have some intention into my lucid dreams and, you know, really like make the most of that time. People can have lives through in their lucid dreams that
they can get in touch with past lives,
get in touch with karma
from past lives and kind of lift this veil. It was cool. Robert was, he just seems so in touch with these different unconscious realms. Like, he is a Casaneda figure to me.
Yes.
I mean, well, yeah, he's for like, sure. And he can really approach, he knows where these gates exist, you know? And so I guess the kind of question that we were having was between is really lucidity the highest aim as a dreamer? Can we gain a lot out of just kind of being observers and practicing some sort of analysis, or, you know, are we really tending towards lucidity in that?
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, the question there is what can the potential positive, quote unquote, benefits of a lucid state or dream be? And, you know, this is something that extends way beyond just, you know, the lucid dream understanding of today. Like, this is something that in the dream yogas of Tibet, Naropa's dream yogas, like, they basically give a detailed blueprint for why you would want to become lucid and how to become lucid in dreams, and then specifically what to do once you're lucid. And, you know, to completely, you know, shorten the whole thing, what they basically say is once you realize you're lucid in a dream, you don't have a body, you can do a lot more, you can accomplish a lot more. You basically, you know, you meditate and send out good vibes for the benefit of all sentient beings and work through your karma that you have to experience from past actions in your dreams. So that's what, you know, Tibetan Buddhists think about dreaming. And that's, you know, there's plenty of books that still go into that and talk about that today. I mean, I like dreams for a lot of reasons. One is because they're just fundamentally interesting and fascinating. Two is because I think they're an allegory for our waking life. And anything that you are theoretically doing in a dream, you're not maybe going to physically do that in this reality, but metaphorically, they can certainly apply in a lot of different ways. That's why I like hearing people's dreams without context. I like to see symbols that can pop up across people's kind of, you know, dreamscape and how that can potentially align with things that have been going on for millennia. I mean, Carl Jung was excellent at noting this when he was doing, just by virtue of doing so many dream analyses, he started to see themes and patterns emerge, not only for individuals and individual kind of complexes and archetypes, but also collectively he would see patterns emerge that kind of gave him some inkling that a war was going to happen. So, you know, they're maps, dreams are maps, they can be tools, they can be, you know, really practical ways for getting in touch with stuff that you can't experience when we kind of lift up the veil of consciousness, you know, when we wake up every day. So yeah, I mean, dreams are awesome.
Yeah, they are, right? And I mean, Carl Jung's journey is so interesting because he really went inside himself. This was a kind of a journey of solitude in so many ways. So, I mean, in your own practice, do you kind of practice any certain analysis or integration of your dreams? Do you think that these tools are really inside us, or have there been certain sets of symbols that are more helpful to you, or, you know, psychotherapy, or how do we, how do we kind of approach this?
So, I mean, there's a lot of different ways. I mean, truthfully, what I will say is like a big part of my practice these days is synchronicity, the podcast. Like that has opened up so many doors that kind of validate or show me things about myself and just kind of what I'm trying to do or the world at large, that I would consider that like a big part of my practice. And it's something that I do consistently and think about every day. The other thing I do is every single day I chant, usually while jogging, sometimes while I'm distracted, the Hanuman Chalisa, which is something I learned a few years ago in Maui at a Ram Dass retreat. And while I love so many of the teachings of Ram Dass and so many just wonderful things that he has to teach and say, I don't necessarily align extremely heavily with that particular bhakti path.
Mm-hmm.
That being said, I had some very direct experiences not under the influence of any psychedelics that validate that I have a very strong connection to a guru called Neem Karoli Baba, who is Ram Dass's guru. And because of that, I took the time to learn the Hanuman Chalisa, and I do it every day. And what I love about it is it's essentially a mindfulness practice, because when you learn something that's 40 verses long, right, 40 lines long in another language that you've never heard before, in Hindi, very interesting things start to happen as you're chanting it and you commit it to memory. I can reel through this thing in about 5 to 8 minutes, but I can also think about, as I'm chanting it or saying the words, 50 other things, 100 different things. So you catch yourself saying these words out loud on some level of, you know, consciousness. And then another part of consciousness pops up that says, like, hey, like, you're chanting the Hanuman Chalisa, and you're also thinking, well, that's not even what happens at first. First, you're just thinking about some other shit. Like, oh, I got to do this. I got to get the grocery store. I got to do this. Then you notice yourself talking about the grocery store and doing the Chalisa. So you now have like these three distinct awarenesses happening. And I think that's kind of the trick with a lot of mantra and daily practices, whether it's an explicit mindfulness practice like Vipassana or Shamatha or any type of particular path, is you begin to see just what's going on below the threshold. And I think in the same way, dreams provide that same level of mindfulness in terms of, like, this is going on below our level of consciousness. This is why my podcast is called Synchronicity, is like, those are little moments when we're awake, when we experience something that transcends our normal understanding of how the world works. Those are important experiences, I think, and ultimately kind of just show us this reality that, again, is below our threshold of consciousness, which is very difficult to understand, because as we're having this conversation, we're consciously processing it, but there's a whole other part of all of us that's like, well, I am also aware that this is going on, and there's other stuff going on down here, but we have... I do think, like you guys do, coming up with ways to get in contact with that in a healthy and respectful way is what moves the individuation process along.
Right. And kind of dwelling in the state that's just kind of right below, like kind of right at the upper limit of what would be kind of the ego consciousness. That's kind of where we want to be. And that's kind of where mindfulness brings us in practice a lot of the time.
That's right. I mean, that is what the goal.
Yeah.
I don't know if there's not a goal necessarily, but that is what you come to realize as you do any type of mindfulness things. And I'd like to expand that notion
mm-hmm.
past just like sitting down and closing your eyes or opening your eyes and paying attention to your breath. There are so many different forms of mindfulness, and finding one that works for you individually the best in an authentic and organic way. Like that's everyone should be trying to figure out what that is.
Cool. I was
curious, you know, when you learn that mantra and kind of your direction, I know you've worked with Ram Dass, but then I'm curious also like where the whole MindPod Network started. And
oh yeah. MindPod Network is a very interesting situation. So essentially we're all in Maui, and I think I was smoking a joint with Duncan Trussell in the parking lot of this like really nice center. I mean, for anyone who knows me, like I always will find weed wherever I am, even if it's something that I'm not getting through customs, flying across like 4 or 5 time zones, like I will find weed somewhere. So I had some weed and
oh, yeah.
It was really good. I think the guy who was actually from, he wrote the Canna Bible. I forget the guy's name, but he lives on Maui and he like grows this amazing weed. So this stuff was like really fucking good. Anyway, so we were talking to Duncan and he was like, you know, you guys should have a podcast network. And it's me and I don't remember exactly who else was there. I don't think people affiliated with MindPod Network at that time. And I'm like, yeah. And he's like, yeah, you should do it. And I'm like, well, I would have to do everything. Like, you know, no one's going to set up the logistics and technical. It's like, what did you think this could be? So he started kind of outlining some of the teachers who we worked with from Love, So Remember, Ram Dass's foundation, saying, well, you know, they could each have their own podcast. So what we did is we weren't really able to get extemporaneous or real-time conversations from a lot of these teachers, but we took a lot of their archives and started putting them up under the guise of podcasts. So they're just basically Dharma talks. Over time, we were able to build up like a pretty good following of people. We ran an Indiegogo that we raised like almost $40,000 for to build a mobile application and all these other things. Now, this is where the story gets interesting. I co-founded MindPod Network with three other people. And right now, MindPod Network, I'm the only one who has anything to do with MindPod Network. The other two people left, didn't want really anything to do with it. And Raghu, who's the executive director and my friend and someone I still deal with to this day, basically we had to figure out how to split this thing up. So right now there are two podcast networks. One is MindPod Network and one is Be Here Now Network. Be Here Now Network is what Raghu is running over at Love Serve Remember, which is all of those teachers and those archive talks, and they're putting out some new talks, and like Ram Dass's old talks, lots of great, awesome stuff that we know that people are really benefiting from. At this juncture, though, MindPod Network has kind of not shifted directions, but we're bringing on people who aren't necessarily teachers per se. While we do have Tara Brock on MindPod Network, who's amazing, her podcast, you know, is incredible. And that's mm-hmm. based on her giving talks in the DC area every week. Most of the people, all other people on MindPod Network who are actually putting out regular podcasts at this point are younger and not teachers and approaching it from many different perspectives, but all through the lens of genuinely wanting to understand, you know, what life is about, what death is about, where are we living, why are we here, how do we make this world a better place? And so, like, it's been a very... MindPod Network was originally founded in November of 2014. So now 2 years later, it's something very different than it was when it originally started. But I mean, the opportunity that I had to build it and learn about podcasting as a medium and community building and what kind of the potential for this medium and these types of content is, has been just like incredibly, like it's a gift. Like, and I look at that every single day, like I'm really fortunate to have been in this position where like I see how this stuff works and how it can actually impact people. Like the real benefit of MindPod Network and Be Here Now Network, I know I can speak for Raghu when I say this, is the emails you get from people who maybe don't have communities or people to talk to about this stuff, but because of the conversations that they're hearing or different perspectives that they're learning about, they feel connected in a way that empowers them to kind of like get in touch with something they wanted to pursue. And it kind of provides validation. So that's the common thread between, I think, all of this stuff.
Right.
No, it's great. And I'm jealous that you and Duncan were on Maui smoking a joint.
Yeah.
I want to even go further back to all the threads that led up to it. So how, you know, was that your first Ram Dass retreat and did you work for him? How did you meet him and how did you even get
okay,
onto Maui?
Yeah.
Should we go this year?
Yeah. So, well, I think they're sold out, but I'm sure you could get there if you stayed off site. I'm not going this year and I haven't been in a few years. So my last retreat was 2014. It's, you know, I'm on the East Coast. It's far. Mm-hmm. It ain't cheap, to be honest. And, cause it's Hawaii. You have to go really far to Maui. So how did this all get started? So let's go back to the beginning. In 2012, I had just started my career as kind of like a digital strategist, like how to leverage, you know, the web to build businesses and content, you know, places and revenue and stuff like that. I just started this and I had like maybe, I think two, maybe three clients. So I was just like getting by and I was living in New York. And I had just run an online music magazine called Curved Magazine. And I generated a ton of traffic to it, but it was so much work to keep up and it wasn't making money. So I was like, okay, mm-hmm. not doing this anymore. So I learned the things, you know, a lot of stuff that I learned from that business endeavor I took to this new career. And at the same time I was starting this career, my friend told me, he's like, hey, you should listen to this podcast called The Duncan Trussell Family Hour. It's really good. I was like, okay. So I listened to an episode and the first episode I heard was with Raghu Marcus, who is the person I just mentioned, my friend today, executive mm-hmm. director of Love Serve Remember. And it was a really great episode. And I listened to some other Duncan podcasts and loved them. I also happened to watch the day before a documentary called Fierce Grace, which is about Ram Dass, which I highly recommend. He had a stroke and it's kind of his... how to deal with that and, you know, what that impact on his life and how he could be helpful Beautiful. For other people after the stroke. So that was a really good movie and it was totally moved by it. And I was like, wow, this guy's really a genuinely incredible being. And like, what a nice awesome person. And I like nice, awesome people. So I reached out to Ramdas.org, Love Serve Remember, and I said, hey, listen, this is who I am. This is what I do. I'm happy to come on and have a conversation and chat about what you guys are trying to do, yada, yada, yada. So that eventually manifested into, I did pro bono work for them for, I think, about like 8 months, like a pretty long time, like kind of gaining trust. And Raghu is someone who's like really nice, incredibly open-minded, but you have to kind of get in to know him before he trusts you. So I did that. Then I was working and still continue to work as this day as a consultant for their kind of digital everything. And that involved for them like revamping their website, their revenue system, their social media channels, their e-commerce stuff, like basically their entire digital ecosystem. I started kind of revamping slowly. So that's how I started working with Love Serve Remember. And that was 2012. 2013 was the first retreat I went to. And that is the retreat where I met Duncan. We were out at dinner. We met the first night, and just Duncan at that point, I think had just broken up with someone. He wasn't going out with Corey yet. But it was right. I think he met her like a few months after this, and he was like pretty down.
I remember
like he was
some not, of those episodes in that period.
Yeah. Like
of
he was
life,
pretty,
yeah.
He was not like super happy about what was going on. And I was just engaged to my now wife, Alexis. So we like kind of like, were like his, not his parents, but like we like were with him the majority of that trip. And Duncan is awesome. Like he's just how he is on the podcast. There's no like other, like I know like he's a human being and he gets upset and normal things, but like, he's just like, he is like really funny, naturally organic people. So like we were hanging out, we would do like beach party every night. We would go all of us and a bunch of people would smoke weed on the beach. It was really fun.
Cool.
So that's how I met Duncan. And I think I had spoken to him before that, cause I was helping with Love Serve Remember, and Duncan was pivotal. That's not a word. Pivotal in terms of getting Raghu to understand the medium of podcasts, that Here and Now Ramdas podcast, which is still like very popular. Duncan kind of was the impetus behind that. And he's always a big champion and supporter of anything that Ramdas is doing. And he, to this day, you know, starting like a few years ago, he's now a panelist at those Maui retreats and brings in a ton of people from a completely different, you know, sector than the normal retreat attendees who would go. And it's very cool to see. So he's just kind of been a champion of that. And Duncan, like, just to show you, like, he also like tipped me off to Kelly McLean, who has a podcast, The Tao of Comedy, on MindPod Network. Like, he called me out of the blue one day and was like, hey, there's this girl Kelly I met, and she's really funny and she's a comedian. You should talk to her. And like, I spoke to Kelly, and like within like 2 days, like I was like, you should be on MindPod Network. And she's just like an incredibly lovely, awesome person who has a great podcast. So like, Duncan is this very interesting character who kind of revolves around a lot of these things. And like, he's really helped a lot and been pivotal in terms of getting MindPod Network off the ground and just like, being a helpful character. So yeah, that's cool. That's how I met him.
Right on.
Yeah. It's beautiful. I mean, it seems really that, you know, with you, you seem to be a guy who really runs on intuition, and it seems like the community you're trying to create with MindPod, where you have folks who have not been kind of graduates of traditional schools of thought, you know, they're also kind of trying to intuit this path. And it's really beautiful, because I think, you know, we also kind of run on intuition, and the confirmation that your intuition is kind of continuing in truth seems to be these synchronicities of life that we dwell on and talk so much about.
I mean, what's funny about you mentioning the intuition there, like I always used, like 2-3 years ago when I was doing a lot of analytics work in my day job, I would always approach clients and say, listen, my work is based on two things, intuition and analytics. Meaning that like you follow your intuition. I think we live in such an amazing time with technology that it can validate intuition in a way that is somewhat unprecedented. So when you have an idea, and you know, most people, when they have an idea, they run with it. And this is kind of like most people's operating systems, including mine. I do it all the time. Like I think of something, oh, that's going to be so great, I do it. You get kind of like a trial or error way of doing it. But now with the web, like, if you take a little bit of time to plan something out and track what's going on and the feedback and the responses you're getting, you can validate intuition, which just makes you better at being an intuitive person. You know, like you start to begin to trust yourself. And yes, like I'd be lying if like my entire life sometimes feels like just like I am slowly being pulled along some path and these things just happen. Like, but I also believe that. And I really think that's a part of this. Like, I always believe good things are going to happen. I always believe things are going to work out. And it's not like I'm tricking my, I'm not like NLPing myself into believing this, like I'm tricking, you know, just saying everything's going to be great. Everything's going to be great. Like I genuinely believe that. I don't know why I do, but I do. And for the most part, I think that belief gives you the kind of energy to continue moving forward with various things you're working on that eventually can be validated. And then that is, you know, I'd like to continue on that path while, you know, being able to keep my ego in check and maintain a perspective that's going to be healthy for me and people around me. That's kind of what I'm trying to do.
And it's so good. It's, I mean, we live in this time where, yeah, you get to manifest things and instantly see the results through your analytics there.
Yeah, it's nuts. It's just a weird, and that can be applied to any, not just like business or kind of, but this can be applied to like major charitable organizations or health initiatives. Like this is really like a tremendous time in history where like we can start tackling like very large problems. And I know it seems like crazy because Trump's president and we're about to like, the EPA is about to be run by a madman who doesn't believe in climate change. But like truthfully, like there are people in the private sector all over the world who genuinely want to help this planet and leave it in good shape for people and, you know, genuinely want to deal with racism and sexism. And, you know, I think all we can do is foster environments inside of ourselves and then outside of ourselves to promote that type of thinking and being. That's like it. You don't have to combat. I mean, yes, you have to call out people who are doing fucked up shit, but focus on yourself first. And I guarantee like something will emerge from within you that is actually going to be a solution to some of these problems.
Amen.
Yeah. Do you think for people out there, do you really think that the kind of the work that people should tend towards in the world is really a kind of work that's going to parallel their own personal evolution? It's kind of interesting as we look at it. Obviously, not everyone has the opportunity to do so, you know.
Right.
But do you kind of see that's how the, is that how you work and the people, I mean, that you're kind of working with as well?
Yeah, I mean, I do think everyone has the opportunity to do this. And I mean this in the strictest sense of the word, like some of the best and most profound teachers who, you know, I primarily think of the Tibetan people, like there are Tibetan teachers who were tortured by the Chinese and had insights and revelations into the true nature of mind while they were being tortured.
Right. Right?
There's not a lot of situations that are worse than that. And like, I'm being mindful of kids who are starving or malnourished and really in, or in a very difficult situation raised in a home
that's kind of what I meant
has no
there.
Love. Yeah, of course. Yeah. And I recognize that. I just would like to point out to anyone who is in a difficult situation, like you can always transcend that. I don't want to make light of the situation or say it's not a big deal. Certain conditions certainly help to inner exploration, but it's not, there's no prerequisite. Like if you believe that everyone inherently has Buddha nature, that means everyone. Mm-hmm. And it's not like an admonishment if you're like, you can't figure it out. I'm in a really privileged and great and awesome situation in my life. I've worked hard for a lot of it, but I'm not enlightened. I didn't figure everything out. Like I still have to deal with the same shit that everyone else does. Like, and I have a lot of great things going on in my life. So, what was the question in terms of, what was the question again?
Do you think that kind of your professional life is paralleling your personal evolution, and how does that kind of advance you, you know, on the path? You were kind of speaking, you know, in a recent podcast about kind of asking some big questions and having these kind of dark nights of the soul, which is a feeling that I have on this project often. And it's something where, you know, periodically I'll say, okay, well, this is just a matter of, you know, attachment, non-attachment, and, you know, really we have to be okay with any outcome here, but, you know, I'm going to do my best. So, you know, is this something where the business is really, you know, teaching me and that these are kind of highlighting work that I need to do personally?
Everything is.
Yeah.
I mean, the truth is everything is, whether it's work, whether it's relationships, whether it's everything is there. I mean, as Ram Dass says, it's a vehicle for your transformation. Mm. Use it. That's the truth. I'm lucky enough. I don't know if I'm stupid enough or lucky enough that things happen in my life that are so incredibly crystal clear that you couldn't mistake them for being anything else. So in that way, yes, my personal evolution completely parallels my, you know, path evolution, my spiritual evolution, because, and business evolution, because, like, truthfully, like, I made a conscious decision to work with a certain subset or group of people a few years ago. And that obviously was, like, it was made based on a lot of different things, mm-hmm. some of which didn't pan out and weren't true, but I made that decision. And since then, I've kind of just been on this track where it's very, you know, I'm focused on this mission, and this mission may involve making money, but it's not the driving force of my business. And I think as long as I can maintain and hold on to that, it's been my experience, like, there is a way to succeed and thrive. And then in terms of the dark night of the soul stuff, like, you know, I think I came out of that relatively quickly. Again, I'm lucky. Nice. But I think what was happening is, and I spoke to a lot of people about this, it was like a regular old psych out. You psych yourself out. Like, that, to me, that dark night of the soul was prompted by a specific incident where I sent out a campaign that was supposed to generate some revenue and it didn't.
Right.
But then I did it a week later after I got some feedback and it did. So I freaked out, basically. It wasn't a freak out because of that specific situation. It was a freak out because I felt like I'd been working so hard and doing all this stuff and it wasn't working and I'd been wasting my time. And, like, you know, sometimes you have to get to that point before it, you know, like in the I Ching, right?
Oh, yes.
They talk about right at the end of something, it turns into its opposite. And that's kind of what happened there. And it doesn't mean everything is great and everything is easy now. Mm-hmm. Like, there's still plenty of things I have to deal with, and I would be looking all of my businesses to be doing better, of course. But in terms of, like, understanding what I'm doing and realizing everything is going to be okay, and that we're really working towards something larger than immediate feeling of being comfortable, that it's probably going to be, there's going to be some challenges and work that needs to be done. But I'm really, like, and to underscore this point, like, enough, like, if you have really good friends, if you have really good family, if you have great people you can speak to, you can pretty much get through any situation in life. Like, that's why relationships make you so much richer than any, like, material possessions or wealth. And I know that's cliched, but, like, you really see it start to happen, like, when you're going through a difficult time.
Absolutely. Yeah. Cool. Is the I Ching a companion for you now in the world?
It is, but, like, you know, what's funny about a lot of the mystical traditions and, you know, tools that we have, I go in and out in much the same way that, like, you know, my inner exploration parallels my external. Like, sometimes I will just be drawn to something and be like, holy shit, I need to learn about the I Ching. Like, I need to understand what is going on here. It is obviously having some influence on what's going on in my life, so I need to understand a little bit about it. But, like, a lot of things, I, like, you know, my copy of the I Ching is probably in the basement right now. I mean, I know it is, and I rarely pick it up now. But when it becomes a poignant tool or guide for me, I certainly go back to it. And I love things like the I Ching because it's one of those books where you can just pop open a random page, and that can be, like, the aspect of divination of, like, trying to understand what's going on psychically.
Oh, yeah.
Much in the same way, like, a book of symbols could be that. Like, I find those to be incredibly useful guides, yeah, and novel ways of getting in touch with stuff.
Always able to relate.
Yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So what is what's kind of the future of Synchronicity and the community looking like? Do you have anything that you kind of want to share that's, yeah, coming up for you, man?
I mean, well, what's coming up most immediately with MindPod Network, which Synchronicity is a part of, is this book called Practically Mindful, which is a sourced and aggregated book from, like, 35 teachers, entertainment people like Duncan, comedians, people on MindPod Network, where it's specifically what I was talking about before. They're exercises, practical exercises from, like, leading people in this stuff on ways to stay mindful and aware without meditation. So that is something that's coming out probably within the next month or two. And I'm really excited about that. I've been working with that on my friend, with my friend Brandon, on that with my friend Brandon, it's easy for me to say, for a few months now. And I'm really excited about that. In terms of Synchronicity, I'm just consistently blown away that in a little over a year, how the community has actually grown. I always wanted it to be a two-way communication channel and not just me broadcasting stuff to people. And I'm really happy to see how this has evolved. There's an email list, which I mentioned, where I communicate with people once a week and we have good conversations. And I just started this Facebook group, Synchronicity Facebook group, which is like blowing my mind.
Yeah, we're going to have to get in there this week.
It's nuts, dude. It's totally nuts. Like I'm shocked how engaged people are in so many ways. So like, you know, just looking forward to the community growing and figuring out ways to kind of allow these things to bubble up from the ether. And, you know, that's it.
Cool. And with Practically Mindful, I'm super excited. When is that supposed to come out?
Well, it was supposed to come out probably in like a week or two,
oh, cool.
But what ended up happening is as we were working on the project, more and more people wanted to be contributors. Mm-hmm. So we kept having to push back the deadline. I would think it would probably be out before, you know, the holidays in December is cool. My guess, but we don't have a hard deadline right now because we want to make sure that everything is done correctly and it's the full proper product. But yeah.
Yeah. I'm super interested, and from what you've kind of described, it seems like everyone is sharing kind of, you know, the uniqueness of their own practice. And, you know, looking back kind of at the conversation, I think we all really do create kind of our unique paths. And
we have to,
yeah,
right?
That's
the way it works. There's no other way. You can't use someone else's, unfortunately, no matter how good it may look.
Uh-huh.
Right on. It's going to be like the office. Hopefully it's going to be the office Christmas gift, man.
Yeah.
looking forward.
We're excited. I mean, I like to focus on things that I actually would find useful. I don't want to make live the illusion of central position, but I do think this is something that we did a lot of research to see what people were interested in. And a lot of people, a stumbling block is meditation.
Yeah.
Oh, I got to sit down. For me, I mean, I'm talking about me specifically, like I have a problem with that. But when I know that there's other ways to cultivate that kind of mindfulness or awareness, that makes it an easier thing. And then the funny thing that starts to happen is once I realize there's other ways of doing it, I actually start to like classically meditate more because it doesn't seem like such a big or different thing than what I'm normally
doing.
Yeah,
it's like exciting and fresh.
Right, exactly.
Not frustrating.
Yes, I like those types of things.
Yeah, no doubt. Cool. Well, we just, let's see, a couple questions to kind of wrap up the show.
Sure.
Yeah. What brings you the most joy in life, ultimately?
My family. I know it's like a sappy answer, but like
beautiful
truthfully
answer.
When I look back, I really do think it's my family. And then like number 1A is music, making or listening to music easily, right there with that.
Are you gonna keep including some of your compositions on the podcast intro and outro? Is that what we've been hearing recently?
You have been,
cool.
And I'm working more diligently on that stuff than I have in the past because I've had really positive feedback and some offers to actually get it released. So that is not actually probably going to release it, but it gives me like motivation to actually finish and continue to work on this stuff. So yeah.
Cool. Nice. That's awesome. Yeah. If I play as well, it'd be funny to see how to get it in there. Maybe it'd be motivational.
yeah.
To right? kind of complete some words that sit out there, man. That's for sure.
Exactly.
I know, and it's cool. The music, and I mean, it seems like in your life, it's fair to say that like the 15-year-old Noah finding, you know, the free music sources on the internet perpetuated you, you know, to the digital magazine, to the Ram Dass Love Serve Remember, to the Maui, and you know, eventually here to Synchronicity
and finding a voice.
Finding your
there's
voice.
A thread.
There's a
definitely
thread,
a thread.
So it's so good. Hey, is there, you know, if you could suggest something for our listeners to like read this week for a fresh perspective, do you have anything that comes to mind?
Yes. Let me think of a really good thing for your listeners that has something to do with dreams. Okay. I'll recommend a book that I was totally enthralled with it's called Mind Beyond Death. And it is by Dzogchen Ponlop Rinpoche. But that book not only covers, obviously, altered states of consciousness and Bardo states, but it really goes in quite in depth to dream yoga and dream states and the Bardo state of dreaming and how that kind of interacts with other dreams, other states of awareness. That book, I don't think it's possible to start reading that book and not be like, holy shit, this is amazing. Nice.
Wonderful.
Nice. We'll have to pick it up.
Yeah.
Well, right on. Noah, man, I appreciate you coming on so much.
Yeah, thanks for the openness and all the sharing, man.
Yeah, and the lessons I've taken away. Well, cool, man. You know, definitely people can check you out on Synchronicity Podcast. What's the
anything
URL
else?
There?
Yeah.
It's syncpodcast.com, S-Y-N-C, and then mindpodnetwork.com. I'm cautious. I don't want to promote my Twitter too much because my Twitter is my unfiltered, like, this is like where I'm actually like, people who follow me on Twitter, I'm sure they like maybe like 60% of what I say. The other 40% is me talking about the Miami Dolphins and, you know, stuff people won't care about. But I am also on Twitter.
Right on. If you're a fan of the Dolphins, check them out on Twitter.
Yeah, exactly. Then you're really going to love it. Yeah.
Excellent.
Awesome. Well, cool, man. Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you so much. We look forward to doing it again sometime, man.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you guys.
Right on. Have an excellent day and week, man.
All right. Peace.
Hey, y'all, just a quick reminder to check out the Alan Watts Electronic University. Go to www.eatdreambee.com/Alan Watts and you'll get 25% off your order. Some really essential stuff in there. We love Alan.
Yeah, if you're going to go spend your money on some sweet audio swag, the Alan Watts University is the place to go, man. Go charge yourself up and have an excellent week. Ciao.
Take care.